Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim.
Today on the pod, we will be getting into how organizations can elevate their performance through coaching and drive organizational results. Cindy Flett is currently the full-time executive and high-performance coach with Purpose Unlimited. Her coaching journey began in sport, evolved into teaching, leadership in high-performance sport, and eventually business leadership development. We're thrilled to have her here with us today. Welcome, Cindy.
Oh my goodness. It is wonderful to be here with you guys today.
We are so excited to have you. Why don't we kick off? Tell everybody a little bit about what you're doing right now.
I am living my dream, living my best self. I wake up every morning excited because I have the amazing opportunity to support 60 plus leaders in an organization that has a culture that I love and fits well with my personal values. Because I'm on the inside, I actually get to see how they develop, how they grow, how they follow through on what they're learning, understand what their challenges are. And I get to gather multiple sources of data to be able to kind of support them even more effectively than I would if I was on the outside.
Okay, so Cindy, earlier in your career, you were primarily working as an external coach within organizations. And this latest role that you have now is quite unique. You're actually an internal coach working for one organization, but supporting all the leaders within it. Can you tell us what you find the differences are? I know you touched on it a little bit in your first answer that you get to follow through, but what are some of the other differences you really notice about coaching this way as opposed to how you started your career?
So I started my career kind of in the corporate area of coaching, just doing little snippets of kind of one-off with a leader here, a leader there, you know, a short-term dedicated stint. And they would bring their goals and we would coach through that. Through that process, they would feel a sense of movement and of growth. And I really had nothing other than my ability to be able to ask questions and listen to really unpack and understand the extent to which they were truly growing, to the extent to which that they maybe perceived they were growing. And all of us can tell ourselves stories. And I don't want to, I don't want to say that they were fabricating things or being overly positive. In a lot of cases, it was actually the opposite. You know, they were actually underplaying or undervaluing the extent to which they had grown or had impact. And it took a lot of energy to pull that out. In the inside coach world, I actually can see and hear firsthand the impact that a leader's focus and commitment to developing themselves and holding themselves accountable in a certain area actually cascades. And so when I get them to unpack it, I know and can assess the extent to which they are growing in terms of their own self-awareness, which if it's not there, I can ask other questions, unpack it a little bit more. It's not me telling them, no, you're wrong. You actually did have impact here. It's actually much more about me using that information to ask other questions that allow them to kind of peel back the layers and understand for themselves. Because as confident as I am in someone, yes, they can borrow my confidence a little bit, but at the end of the day, if they're under pressure, they have to own their own confidence.
So Cindy, I know way back in the day, you started as the head coach of the national team for Water Polo Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about how that experience of working as a coach with athletes on a team may have helped to really set you up for the career that you've built and for the incredible success that you've had?
Well, without a doubt, there's definitely an influence. There's definitely an alignment there. The interesting thing about coaching a national team is you are actually borrowing athletes from other people because they are day to day working with another coach and then they come to work with me. And at the times they're not with me, I have to then gather data from their coaches or interact with them. And so in a lot of ways, it's kind of similar to what I do now. I work with a leader, I'm coaching them, But I'm also often coaching their leader, right? And sometimes their leader's leader. And so it's a fascinating line to walk because even when it was a national team situation and I was responsible for evaluating and selecting athletes, there were confidences there, right? There were conversations that I had with athletes in confidence that with information that I wouldn't share with their club coach, particularly if there was some differences there. And then likewise, some challenges that maybe the club coach would illuminate for me and ask me for help with about how to approach a certain athlete that I didn't go back to the athlete and say, hey, by the way, here's what your club coach said about you. So the area of confidentiality is really important. Having said that, though, being able to transition from that into forward moving growth. So in fact, you can have transparent conversations and you can create a culture of feedback. Takes trust, it takes time, but I had to do that in sport. And that's part of what I think I'm able to transfer into the corporate environment in a way that probably not a lot of other coaches have been able to do or have felt co as comfortable doing as I feel.
So, Cindy, what do you think the motivating factors were for your current organization to create such a role? Because I think you're the first one. What was their motivation to find an amazing full-time person like yourself?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a little bit funny because there was probably a few different sources of what triggered it. I have to say that one of the leading stories that I consistently hear is the show Billions. Often I get asked if that's kind of what I do, and I will kind of make a joke about it and say, yeah, minus the really exciting personal life. Yeah, because I'm like, I am zombie by 6 o'clock and in bed by 8, right? Like there is nothing exciting going on over here at all. But just that kind of role and having that right hand to the CEO and having the ability to be able to know the key leaders to support them and not run from that over to the CEO and go, oh my God, this is going on with so and so, right? To be able to maintain that strict boundary is really important. So that kind of imagery around that, I think, sparked a lot of people or got a lot of people thinking like that would be interesting if we had that in our world. And then, I did have a private practice where I had external clients, and it just so happened that one of my external clients is linked with the organization that I'm currently with. There's some through lines, some ties there. That other organization had transitioned to having a full-time internal coach and had a lot of success with it and encouraged my CEO to consider it as an option. So that was the second reason. And then the third reason is frankly the one that made me choose to leave my private practice. And that's simply in all of my time working with all of the organizations and all of the CEOs, I have never once had the opportunity to work with a CEO who had been a successful team sport head coach before becoming a CEO. And the fact that Som had had that experience and knew what it was like to not only lead a sport team, but to lead a high performance sport team at the university level and to win championships leading that team 5 of the 6 years that he was head coach created an interesting dynamic that really intrigued me and excited me.
That's pretty cool because you're obviously to some degree speaking the same language in a lot of ways. And so you come into that with a way to relate to each other that probably made the development of your role once you got there a lot easier. That's really cool.
Well, it is interesting. Like a lot of executives, I think the data tells us that 80% of executives have had experience in sport. It is a common through line. However, like I said, I've worked with a lot of CEOs up until this point, and I'm not aware of any of them having been a team sport head coach at a university level or higher. That had success. And so this was a real differentiator for me. And you're quite right, Jen. Like it does allow me to transfer and use knowledge from sport and scenarios from sport as examples and to create some imagery that allows us to have conversations about, well, now what would this look like in this environment that you are leading in right now?
So, Cindy, you're talking a lot at, you're describing your current organization as being led by somebody who was obviously a coach themselves and somebody who was in the athletic world. But you also talked quite a bit about trust, and you talked quite a bit about being in an organization where there is inherent trust that you are going to maintain confidentiality. Would you say that those are two of the key ingredients that our listeners should be thinking about, making sure that are in place before bringing in a coach internally? Or if not, how would you describe the ideal organization who should be thinking about bringing in an internal coach?
Well, I think that's a great question. My easy answer is I think every organization should bring in an internal coach. What does it take to set it up? I think you got to be really clear before you do that. What's the objective? What are you hoping to accomplish with that? So, one of the five core values at Purpose is winning through individual and collective growth. And every person in the organization having a growth plan, not the traditional development plan, but an actual growth plan that is about how do they want to grow? What are the areas that are most important to them that's really focused? Is becoming a very consistent norm in the organization. It just speaks to the fact that from the executives throughout the organization, having kind of a growth mindset and a learning mindset for yourself and constantly challenging yourself is a core part of what Som and the other executive members see as a differentiator for the organization. They don't want anybody to feel like they're going to stagnate. And so with that objective in mind, having a full-time internal coach gives people the opportunity to be able to work with a coach to help them. Like some of the core habits of champions, doesn't matter what the domain is, right? Whether it's in the corporate sense, it's in the arts, it's in sport, you got to have a reflective practice. And you've got to be really good at setting clear goals for yourself. But doing that and getting that habit is really hard to do. And that's where having a coach that is there to support you and your growth in areas that are important to you and help you build that habit of setting goals and reflective practice is so valuable. And if that's the focus, then how do you make that happen? Well, that's where the trust piece comes in, right? And you're really clear from the very beginning. And I think most coaches would be. Like that, there is confidentiality. Here is what I do. Here is what I don't do. And I articulated that even before I was hired and said, this is what I do. This is what I don't do. Are you okay with that? And we had agreement with that. And then when I came into the organization, I did that with the executives. And then I did that with everybody I worked with to say, here's what I will do with you. And here is what I do not do. And one of the key things I do not do is I don't break confidence. And I don't pick sides.
I've often seen an organization, Cindy, that unfortunately a coach comes in and you referenced it earlier. A coach sometimes comes in to remediate. So somebody is not performing. And Jennifer, we've seen this a million times throughout HR. It's like the brain smacker about why it is that you want to make the investment in the person who isn't performing versus making the investment in the people who are. Can you tell us a little bit about your perspective, Cindy, on that?
Yeah, so first of all, when we look at the research, the common phrase that we've all heard for a long time when someone is underperforming, it's PIP, right? We put them on a PIP. And sometimes, oftentimes, coaching is associated with the PIP. I don't like talking about PIPs. What I am much more interested in is when someone isn't succeeding, I would rather coach their leader because what I know is that. What are the root causes of underperformance? It's typically one of three things. It's a lack of clarity. And by clarity, I mean they don't understand where we're trying to get to. They don't understand the role. They don't understand the expectations, the performance level, et cetera. That's one. It's competence. They don't have the skills or they don't have the knowledge. They were misplaced. They were a misfit for that role, or they have that, but they don't have the self-confidence. So when they're under pressure, they can't tap into that, right? Or the third reason is they don't have the will. Now, the vast majority of people, like I would say very, very few people in the world wake up in the morning, get out of bed and go, can't wait to get to work and do a shitty job today.
We say that all the time.
So will, if it's will, what's going on that's really sucked the joy and the desire out of people? So again, I want to be working with the leader to kind of figure out what's going on there. Is it competence? Well, what have they done to try to help that individual develop the skill set? The reality is we got a lot of things that people have to do that they haven't learned how to do yet. They've got to learn on the job, right? Because they're not learning it in school or whatever. We got to be prepared to be teaching people and coaching people all the time now. But before all of that, it starts with clarity. Because in my experience, at least half the time, if not more, the root cause of underperformance is a lack of clarity. And if I can work with the leader to help them figure out and put some strategies in place to be able to start with clarity and ensure there's clarity, often that starts to actually resolve the underperformance.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think it is counterintuitive because you're right. Focusing on the leader is a totally different way of trying to resolve a performance issue, whether it be clarity based or not, than trying to focus on the person who is, quote unquote, not performing. I think that's really amazing advice to look at it completely differently.
So Cindy, I have a question because some of our listeners might be thinking, well, this sounds great for a large organization, but there's no way I could afford this. What would your advice be for small organizations or startups, and how could they access internal coaching or coaching to this level that would really help to support them?
So probably the best answer I have to that is what I was doing before I went inside Purpose full time. So while I wasn't inside, I actually worked with a number of smaller organizations in a retainer type format where I was working with multiple leaders, multiple individuals, sometimes not a leader, but a key contributor, right? A key influencer in the organization. But again, philosophically, the intent was the same. I was there to work with top performers who were, really looking after the people on the team and ensuring the organization was moving in the direction of attaining their goals, right? Of truly high performing. And so even if it was a group of 8 or 10 of them, it still made a considerable difference, right? That I think is manageable, is looking for who can you bring in. But again, the parameters have to be such that it's established really clear about what does happen with that and what doesn't happen with that. And so sometimes it's team coaching the leaders, and sometimes it's one-on-one coaching of a number of people in the organization. And then periodically, what I would do is I look for kind of the themes, and is there a through line or is there a pattern forming where on a quarterly basis I can go back and go, okay, so when I look at everything everybody's working on, a key issue right now in the organization seems to link to clarity and it seems to link to opportunities to enhance internal communication, right? So think about what you're doing as an organization in that and look at what are the strategies that we can put into place to start to be predictive and therefore proactive so they can get strategic. And that's really about organizational coaching, is not about feeding confidential information. It's instead being able to analyze where, if anywhere, are the patterns and the key themes, bubbling those up in such a way that is very forward moving and productive, not evaluative and negative, right? To be able to say, where are the opportunities? What are the one or two levers you could pull here that would make the big difference? Because otherwise, I find, especially in startup situations, right, where there's a lot going on and there's a lot on the line, the tendency is there's lots of little fires, and you want to play, the expression I use is whack-a-mole. You want to like just beat down all those little fires, and that can be really exhausting for the leaders in that company.
Okay, so Cindy, both Kim and I are painfully aware that you are not accepting any more clients and you're clearly quite occupied. So, for our listeners who might be considering looking for coaching for themselves, or like per the last question, trying to get something similar in their organization, what do you re recommend they do in order to find the right person for their organization?
Coaching as a profession is growing quite a bit right now. And I think what's really important is, great to dive in, great to want that. As I talked about before, like what are your objectives for doing it? And then how best is that served? And you got to kind of know your culture a little bit. So Sam and his leaders in the organization knew enough to know that it's very cultural in the organization that a lot of people at Purpose have been athletes. And so to have a coach that had a sport background was highly preferential for them because there was fit, there was alignment. Not 100% of people, but a lot of the people. And so the ability to be able to make that connection point was good. And then I think you got to be willing to talk with a lot of different coaches. There's quite a few out there now, and you got to figure out to what extent. So I don't coach functional aspects of the job at all. I don't get into that at all. In fact, functionally, I don't know anything about the industry I'm in.
Wow,
Right?
that's
I don't
cool.
know anything about investments or anything else. I'm not there to coach from a functional perspective. I'm there to coach from a foundational perspective. Self-awareness, resilience, energy management, leadership skills. That's what I'm there to coach, right? They knew that's what they wanted. And so, they were able to find me. You as an organization, you may want or need something else as a priority, but get really clear on that. And then speak with a few different people and make sure you come at it from that lens. And also be very clear on just how many people in our organization are you going to need that person to coach. Because some, like I coach on average 40 to 50 people a week.
Wow.
Wow. Plus, I do what I call power pair sessions. So, two key people that work together, right? And I facilitate the dialogue between them, or power pods, which are smaller units that have to work together of three to four or five people, right? To get them to be able to optimize. And then I do team sessions. I do that because that's what I get energy from. I get energy from being busy and working with a lot of people, right? If you what you need is a little bit of a smaller, tighter focus, then you get a coach that is going to be comfortable and love an environment where they're coaching a few people a day and doing something with that coaching, following up with those individuals, whatever it happens to be, is your kind of is your framework. That I would say is the hard part probably for organizations because it's so new. Good to have some key strategic thought partners to be able to work that through. And I would say, like, the two of you are a perfect example in the roles that you play in terms of fractional HR and the experience both of you have had to be a thought partner with an organization on what's the strategy here? What are we solving for with this? And what's the right framework to be able to either have a full-time internal coach or to have a retainer type scenario, and how, like, what is success going to look like? How are we going to measure success? And then go from that into finding the best fit.
I think that's a great parallel, Cindy, because, as we were talking before, not all organizations might be able to afford immediately to have an internal coach. But the idea about finding somebody who you can have a relationship with even externally might be key to helping to drive performance, at least for the beginning, and then thinking about a longer term strategy of bringing someone in. Similar to the way that Jennifer and I work with our clients, oftentimes they can't afford, or nor do they need, a full-time HR person right away. But as we build and develop that need internally, then we see them going on and hiring someone that they can count on every single day, which is fantastic. So here's one of the questions that we ask all of our guests. What is the one thing that you believe a small business can do today to change the game for their people?
Does it have to be just one?
No, we're rule
You...
breakers, man.
Okay, good. There's a couple of key things that come to mind. And one of them actually stems from my own reflection on what I wish I had done more of, both as a high-performance sport coach and then as an executive myself, leading the teams that I led. And now that I've worked with so many leaders in so many different industries, I see the opportunity is still there for everybody. And I think it's just natural, it's just who we are as human beings. So when we're high performers, the tendency is to constantly be looking for how do we fix things? How do we get better? What's next? And what we don't often do is hit the pause button for a second and start with what's working and what is it about what that individual is doing that's enabling that success. The reflection point, just a little story, as a national team coach, I had a situation where we were in a game that was going to determine whether or not we were going to play for a medal at World Championship. And I had an extremely gifted offensive player who I never saw her miss a breakaway ever in her career, both when I coached against her at a club level and then when I coached her with the national team. And we were in this game and we were down by a goal with 2 minutes to go in the game. And she got not one, not two, but three clear one-on-one breakaways. And all three times she did something that I've never seen her do ever before. And all three times she hit the crossbar and didn't score.
Wow.
That's the impact of pressure. She knew the weight of the moment. And what I realized, not at that moment, but on reflection afterwards, that was on me. I let her down. How did I let her down? Every time she scored, nice job, great shot, great goal. Like I was a cheerleader. I wasn't a coach. What I needed to do in that moment, not necessarily immediately in that moment, but afterwards on reflection, is have a conversation with her and ensure that she was really crystal clear on what it was she did that enabled her to be successful. So even when we've got top performers and we see a high level of performance out of someone, we need to not make the assumption that because they've done it once or twice, that they actually understand how what it was they did that led to their success, and they're always going to be able to do it, because that's not true. So that's one thing I would say is never miss a moment when you see someone do something effective. It doesn't have to be above and beyond. It doesn't have to be, oh my God, spectacular. I've never seen that before. But when someone does something effective, never, ever let the opportunity to go by without letting them know what it was that you saw them do that was really effective. And then unpacking with them what the impact of them doing it that way was on them, on the team, on the situation, on the client, whatever it may be, because that will deepen it. That will embed it in their DNA. And then when they're in that pressure-filled moment, they don't have to think about what to do. They go back to what they know they can do, and it will be there. So that is one thing. The other thing that I would say is, and I have to really credit kind of the days that I spent at Third Factor, which is a boutique leadership development training firm that I've worked with. I mean, I'm even still working with them today as associate faculty. What I've done though is I've taken that concept and actually like transitioned it into direct application, and I'm happy to share it with everyone. But the concept is, how do you get people to see the opportunity to use the work that they are doing and have to do on a day-to-day basis as the platform through which they can grow? Because we often look at growth or development as this standalone silo. For me, that's an unnecessary disconnect, because the work that people do on a day-to-day basis, if they can identify areas that they want to grow that's important to them, right? And it's linked to how they want to continue to evolve, and they can use the opportunities that their day-to-day job presents for them as the platform through which to work on that growth. I mean, think about it for both of you in the roles that you've been as HR leaders. You know very well if somebody can actually feel and know and acknowledge that they're growing while they're doing their work, what's their commitment level, their engagement level,
For sure.
what's the quality of work? And we don't do that enough. And so that's one of the things that we're really focused on at Purpose right now, is trying to help leaders have conversations with their people so their people can see, A, they can identify and share with their leaders, here's where I really want to grow. And it's not the leaders telling them, by the way, here's where I need you to improve. That's not the conversation. This is a person saying, you know what? I see a real opportunity for me to get a lot more comfortable speaking in meetings, speaking in public. Like, I'm really interested in that. And saying, okay, let's take a look at the projects that you're involved in right now, and where are there opportunities where you can come in and speak in those environments, right? Even if it just starts with setting a goal of every meeting, I want to make a contribution by either asking a really valuable question or sharing an example or sharing an opinion. And so, okay, that's your goal. How do you set yourself up for success with that? And it's like, what's the next meeting between now and 2 weeks from now when we get together again? What are the key meetings you're in? And what do you need to do to prepare yourself to be able to ask that question, right? Or make that statement? And what are the topics? Doesn't have to be on everything, right? And you build, right? It's that progression of, okay, I'm speaking up in meetings now. What's the next step? The next step is you're on this, on this MAT team, or you're on this project team representing your functional team in that area. When you come back, you want to do a 3-minute update presentation on where is this project at, so everybody on the functional team knows where it's at. How are you going to do that? So they're doing the work and they're using the environment to be able to grow and develop. And I think that just overall, that's something that we really underutilize. Just to close this out with a little bit of a story from my time at Third Factor, there was an Olympic rower who did an analysis, did some research on kind of the life of a rower over the course of time preparing for the Olympic Games, and looked at the amount of time spent in training, in competition, and in recovery. And it was fascinating because the largest of that pie graph, the largest amount of time was spent in recovery. right? And recovery modalities, sleeping, eating, therapy, all of that, right? Because rowers go hard. Then the next biggest chunk was the training piece. And the competition piece was such a small, tiny sliver, you couldn't even see it. And if you think about the business world, if you think about training and you think about competition and you think about recovery, what does that pie chart look like? It's almost the inverse of that, right?
Yeah.
The training piece is so tiny, it's so minuscule. How do we expand our mindset about where there are opportunities for people to be learning and growing? And how do we weave that into the day-to-day that we treat as like the competition because we're always on point? So it's team meetings, it's organizational meetings, it's internal stuff as a starting point before we branch out to the clients. But the opportunities are there. We just haven't historically thought of those as opportunities to grow.
I love that. All right, Cindy. So we've got some rapid fire questions for you before we wrap up today's episode. You ready?
Okay, absolutely. I don't know if I'm ready or not, but
Oh,
yeah,
you're ready.
I'm always ready.
First job.
Teaching dancing.
Ooh.
Wow. Did not know that.
Did that catch you off guard? So my mom was a choreographer and dancer and dance teacher, and she ran a dance studio when I was growing up. When I was 12, she basically taught me how to be a dance teacher and then gave me classes to teach and paid me for teaching those classes. I was teaching 4-year-olds tap dancing.
Oh my God, I love that.
There was 12 of them with tap shoes.
Oh my God, I love that.
I should have been sponsored by Tylenol or seriously. And my mom made it look so easy and they were so well behaved, right? Because she mentored me first and I would help her. And then she gave me classes. And to her credit, she wasn't there. She gave me the class. And after the second class, I said, "Mom, I don't think I can do this. Like, they don't listen to me. They run around with their tap shoes." And like, and my mom just said, "Cindy, hun, reward the behavior you want to see more of."
Love that.
The kids in the class who were sitting, being patient, I gave attention to, and suddenly the others started to notice and started to do what they were doing because they were modeling the way and getting my attention. And I wasn't giving attention by screaming and yelling and chasing after the ones that were running. All of a sudden, things started to come into line. That was my first job. I mean, really, if you think about it, from there, head coach for the first time when I was 14,
Wow.
and just, coaching, teaching, leadership from the time I was 12 on.
All right, Cindy, best job.
The job I'm in right now.
Biggest mess up at work.
Oh.
Can't be better than the 4-year-old top kids.
I was coaching the national team in a foreign country, and one of the athletes got quite ill during a game. Someone had to take that athlete to the hospital. We were in the middle of a game. The communication systems, I didn't set up the communication systems effectively. So after the game, when we went back to the residence, the athlete was not there, and the individual who had taken them to the hospital was not there. I could not find them. I started to really worry. Another country, a doctor that was with the team in another country came with me, and we got drivers and we went to 7 different hospitals
Oh my gosh.
in and around Havana trying to find my athlete. And it was my very first international competition as a national team head coach. And all I could think of was, they are never going to let me coach any event ever again. I have lost an athlete.
Oh my God. So how did the story end?
Well, after going to 7 different locations and actually like hearing that that athlete had been at a couple of them, but not being able to trace them and track them back, I went back to the residence preparing to make very difficult conversation phone calls with key people saying, I need big time help here because I don't know what's happened. And I went back, I went up to my room. And next door to my room was the room with the athlete, and the door was open and the athlete was sitting there.
Oh, so much stress, though.
They had come back and there was a disconnect in communication. And like, it's on me because I'm the head coach, right? I wasn't clear enough with what my expectations were about the process and the order of things. And so, I mean, have I screwed up in other areas? Yeah, but when it comes to like having the responsibility of looking after another human life, harder to imagine there's anything bigger than that one.
Losing an actual human.
Losing a human and best learning.
Well, it's probably like the first story I told, right? About really learning about how important it is to take the time when someone does something well to really be specific and reinforce it and help them understand how it was effective and help them see for themselves the impact that it had. Because I really believe that when people see and notice the impact, it goes deep, whatever that impact happens to be.
All right, Cindy. And finally, quickest quit.
It was the only what I would call mindless job I've ever had.
Okay.
It was at a mall, and it was a, I don't want to call it the name of the business because they still exist today.
Totally fine.
And you could probably, you may go there and buy popcorn every now and then. It just wasn't for me. It wasn't for me, like standing there, do you want double butter or savory like me?
Take note that it was worse to be bored and unengaged than listening to tap shoes on the feet of 12 small
100% wrong.
children.
100%. And that's just me, right? That's what makes my heart sing, is even if there's challenges and stuff, it's just in my DNA to help people, to try to help people and be there to support people become the best they can be. If you're a 4-year-old tap dancer, if you're a, a national team athlete, or you're a CEO in a startup or scale up or whatever. Like, I actually was coaching my CEO today. He came on and he said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "I am fantastic. I get to wake up and do what I love to do and what I believe I was put on this earth to do every single day."
No doubt. That's awesome.
Jennifer and I are very blessed also, Cindy. Not only did you agree to come on the podcast, but we have both had personal and professional experiences with you. If folks wanted to get a little bit of Cindy, I know you're not taking any private clients today. Tell us maybe about some opportunities at Purpose Investments or where it is that you're next going to be training for Third Factor.
What I do find time to do with Third Factor is they are a pretty significant component of the executive leadership development program at Queen's University. And so I always support that, and I'm there doing coaching as a component of that. Purpose as an organization, disruptive financial services, developed more than six products that were the very first of their kind anywhere in the world. If that excites you, if that interests you, we work with advisors a lot who support people, and we like advisors who are there to truly put the client first. We are scaling, so we are always looking for good quality people in
Awesome.
all areas.
Thanks so much, Cindy.
I also have some really good connections of other coaches, so people can reach out on LinkedIn and find me on LinkedIn. And I'm always happy to have a conversation or two and to help you find a coach that can work for you, whether it's an organization or it's an individual.
That's so generous. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening. And thank you, Cindy, for your time. This has been.
Oh, anything for either of the two of you, and any organization out there would be really blessed to have either of you or both of you working with them. You are some of the most effective strategic leaders in the area of HR that I have ever had the pleasure of working with.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was great having you, and we're really looking forward to getting this up for all our listeners.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you love this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.